From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The mayor continues to trumpet Chicago as the city to beat in the scramble for Amazon's promise of bringing tens of thousands of high-paying jobs to the city that can deliver the best offer.
We will have a package that's competitive with other cities. You are underestimating the amazing competitive advantage of the incentive of the best educated workforce with the best higher education system, with the best aviation system, and the bus mass transit system at the lowest price in the United States.
Well, I'll say this. I believe Illinois is far and away the best location for Amazon to build their center. I believe our plan is not to talk publicly about details in our plan until all other bids have been submitted. We want to make sure we keep our competitive advantage. We don't want to educate other bidders about what we've done.
I always felt we got used just as somebody to drive the bidding up. And I often thought as governor, it would be sort of nice if all the governors just got together and said, look, we're just not going to play this anymore.
That's the former Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle. He says states ought to end the arms race of special tax deals for corporate headquarters and factories. He made his comments on NPR's Morning Edition as cities and states around the country are trying to land Amazon's planned second headquarters. Chicago, of course, has made its bid. We also heard in there Governor Bruce Rauner, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and a report from WLS-TV in Chicago. We'll take a look at the race to attract Amazon's second headquarters, and we'll also look ahead to the veto session, that and more, on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and I'm joined in studio by Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse studio, we have Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio's Statehouse reporter. And our guest this week is Matt Dietrich. He's a reporter with the Better Government Association and PolitiFact Illinois. Matt, good to have you on once again.
Well, thank you, Sean.
Matt and Brian, of course, we've been waiting for the big push to try to get Amazon. We knew that a proposal was coming. It's been submitted. Still not a lot of detail out there, but what do we know about what the state is trying to use to bring those jobs to Illinois?
Yeah, well, like you said, we don't have a lot of detail because this is a secret proposal to bring Amazon to Illinois and potentially the Chicago area. We do know apparently the governor hinted that, you know, there were sites offered in both the city and the suburbs. He, you know, emphasized that this is a joint city and state operation. There was a report that possibly the Freedom Center, which is, I think, the Chicago Tribune's printing plant, there's about 30 acres out there. That's one potential site that was suggested. But this is very competitive. There are cities and states and other governments across the country that are putting in their bids, and Illinois and Chicago are in a big pool of applicants trying to lure Amazon. So it's something where we're just going to have to apparently wait, because I guess the position of the governments here is that this stuff is not public information, although I think there's definitely room for argument about that.
Charlie, we heard at the start there, it was the former Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle, and he, as I mentioned, he said the states ought to end these arms races in which they offer all of these incentives up to these companies, sort of like it's a race to the bottom. Your thoughts on that? Because we've seen this happen, you know, for decades now.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I can remember the same type of discussion that Governor Doyle was getting into at a time back in the 80s when Illinois was pursuing a Saturn plant that ultimately wound up, I believe, in Tennessee. And at that time, a number of Japanese automakers were transferring some of their production facilities to the United States of America, in part out of fear that there would be some kind of a tariff imposed on, quote, foreign-made automobiles. And this arms race went on for a while. We won one. We won the Mitsubishi plant in Bloomington Normal. And at one point, I remember reading a story, I think it was out of Washington, one of the Washington correspondents, where the Japanese companies admitted that they had gotten into this arms race with the states, and their intention all along was only to put one plant in a state and spread them out as wide as they could so that they would get congressional support from those states to avoid any kind of a tariff. So this is an ongoing problem. And you can say in an ideal world, the governors would sit down and say, we're not going to do this. We're not going to let ourselves get, what would you say, get rolled by a company that's looking for the best deal possible to maximize its shareholders' profits, which is what companies do. But in the real world, again, governors won't do that. They're afraid to unilaterally disarm, if you will.
And really, I mean, in fairness to Bruce Rauner or any other governor or city official who's trying to attract this, I mean, the public would sit there and criticize them if they weren't
sure. No, it's the kind of thing that I would say privately that everybody who's bidding on Amazon would, you know, the different cities, the different states would probably wish they didn't have to get into this kinds of an arms race. But on the other hand, the reality is that they really have no choice. It's the same thing with the Foxconn deal that wound up in southeastern Wisconsin. And Illinois didn't get that. And apparently we missed out on a Toyota Mazda plant, that there was some discussion that Illinois had a chance to get that expansion located in the DeKalb-Rochelle area. And now the word is that it's not going to happen. It's going to go somewhere else, probably in one of the southeastern states.
Matt, let me bring you in on this because you've been paying attention as well to Amazon. Get your thoughts on where this all stands and the public's perception of it.
I think, like Charlie just said, the Foxconn deal is one that where a lot of people think that Wisconsin really gave away the store and that it's not going to pay off in the long run. And I don't think Illinois wanted to repeat that. But again, I want, and you know, there's a political side to this too. And if Amazon were to come to Illinois, that would be such a feather in the cap of Bruce Rauner. He's really had a tough summer. He's really going into a very tough reelection campaign. One of his problems is he's got very few accomplishments to run on. So the stakes are really high for him politically on this, because landing this and 50,000 jobs to Illinois would be such a boon to his reelection effort that I think that's why the governor has been very, you know, intensely focused on this. It's interesting, too, that just this week we had, you know, the governor and Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel had just been feuding for throughout the governor's tenure. And this week, the two of them got together to talk about a technology center, a Chicago Innovation Center that the University of Illinois would like to build along the Chicago River in the South Loop. That will be another major thing, not to get too far off the topic of Amazon. But again, for the governor, you know, he's at a place where he's got to really notch some accomplishments really quickly. And the Amazon deal would be the biggest.
When will we know, Brian, when the Amazon announcement will be made?
I haven't seen a timeline for it, and I have heard that it could be months before that decision is made. So I guess the answer to that is I don't know. I did want to return, though, to this question that Matt brought up and Charlie as well about the Foxconn deal in Wisconsin. There have been projections that that could cost anywhere from $219,000 to more than $500,000 per job, depending on whether Foxconn follows through with the minimal 3,000 jobs or is the maximum 13,000 jobs that could be created. And those numbers are actually from a sister site of Matt's, PolitiFact in Wisconsin. And I mean, that is you think about that, that is tax money that could be used to invest in education. You know, you have to ask yourself, is it worth it for to spend that kind of money on jobs, as good as those jobs might be and as sought as they might be? And it's also worth noting, I think, that Illinois is already paying tax incentives to Amazon, totaling more than $82 million through, if you look on the state's website for the EDGE tax credit, which is our main state government economic incentive tool. It allows companies that promise to create or keep a certain number of jobs to basically keep the payroll taxes that they deduct from employees that they would otherwise pay to the state. And the cost per job for these three Amazon warehouses, they're in Aurora, Joliet, and Monee, is an average of $11,500. So that's what the state of Illinois is already paying to Amazon for warehouse jobs in the Chicago suburbs.
And Matt, you talked a moment ago about like this idea of this tech center that the U of I wants to have up there in the Chicago area. It's not just about Amazon, I would think, though, from the supporters of this push. They're thinking that if you can attract a company like that and all of the press that's going to go with that, that suddenly Illinois becomes this hub for business, maybe even more than it is now, certainly, on a national scale.
Well, that's one of the big things that Chicago has going for it when it sells itself to the world. And it's had a lot of corporate headquarters that have come in, moved from out of state into Chicago. And one of the big reasons is they've got so many great universities there and strong education system. And I think this, I believe they call it the Innovation Center that the governor and Mayor Emanuel and a lot of other officials were on hand for this week in Chicago to push for. I think that's part of burnishing the image of Chicago and by extension Illinois as a hub of technology and creativity. It's part of building an educated workforce. But certainly, you know, when you're making a bid for Amazon, that's one of the things that you're trying to promote, is that we've got a great homegrown, a very well-educated homegrown workforce here. And you know, that's one of the ironies, I think, or maybe it was just one of the contradictions of the whole budget impasse that pretty well defined the first 2.5 years of Governor Rauner's term. One of the ironies of it is that it really hurt community colleges and it really hurt Illinois' public university system, which had been regarded as very strong. When you hurt, especially community colleges, when you hurt them like that, that gets into damaging the, you know, the workforce that you're developing here in Illinois. So it's a relief that that's over now and that we've got funding, despite all the many budget problems that we'll be talking about here in a little while. But I think the branding Illinois and sort of shining a light on Illinois as a place that has great education facilities and that is a great center for innovation, that's a pretty big deal. That's pretty important.
And if you look at it, just look at the geography of Illinois and what it has going for us. The reason Amazon located those distribution warehouses around Chicago in the metro area wasn't because they got the great incentives. They looked at it. They looked at the rail network. They looked at the interstate highways radiating out from Chicago all across the country, and they realized that for a distribution center, you need that kind of logistical support. I think I'm correct when I say that no other state has as many major rail lines running through it as Chicago. And you look at O'Hare Airport, which it ranks up there as one of the busiest airports in the world. So Chicago has all these geographic and logistical advantages, if you will, to sell itself, besides having a highly educated workforce, besides having world-class universities in Champaign and in Evanston, Northwestern, and Chicago, the University of Chicago. We have a very well-educated, high-tech, if you will, workforce available for people who are coming in into those industries.
And to be fair to the politicians making the pitch here, they did emphasize that. Mayor Emanuel, I think we even heard it the clip at the top of the show, the universities, the public transit system in Chicago, the infrastructure here. And so, but, you know, the thing is, this is a secret proposal, so we don't know what sort of tax incentives might have been in there. I also wanted to highlight on that issue, one of the most interesting bits of audio I heard this week was on that Morning Edition report where Governor Doyle was also quoted from, I think it was on Wednesday, if you wanted to look it up. It was a clip from 2001. Paul O'Neill, who was then the CEO of Alcoa, the big aluminum company, who was undergoing his confirmation process to be Treasury Secretary under the second President Bush, he said that he never made an investment decision based on the tax code, that any business executive who did was a gambler, because that sort of thing could change on a moment's notice. But then he also said, you know, if you're giving money away, I'll take it. If you want to give me inducements for something I'm going to do anyway, I'll take it. But good business people don't do things because of inducements. And I think Charlie's right. Amazon, probably the tax break was not the deal maker for Amazon to situate those warehouses. They want access to the Chicago market. They're trying to lower those delivery times so that they can get products to you within a day or two. And so having a bunch of warehouses in the fifth most populous state next to the third most populous city in the country, it makes a lot of sense for them. So, but as he said, a business executive, if a state is going to participate in the arms race and throw money at them, they'll take it.
Let's move on to the state budget situation. Of course, we have a budget now, the state adopting one over the summer, and I thought all the discussion on that was over with. We'd look ahead to the next one. They're still fighting over this budget. And Matt and Brian, there's really some dispute out there of whether or not this budget is balanced, at least in the sense of just maybe how far out of balance it is.
Right. I don't think there's any question at this point that the budget is not balanced. Now, at the time that it was put into law, when the legislature overrode Governor Rauner's veto on July 6th, in that snapshot of time, it was balanced on paper by the definition set forth in Illinois law, which meant that estimated expenditures will not exceed estimated revenues. In fact, the budget that was put into law on July 6th had a $360 million surplus. The problem that's come up since then is that a lot of the anticipated savings from that budget is not going to be happening. Now we have a different estimate for how much revenue is going to be coming in. That didn't come until after the budget was put into law. So, and also the other thing is that this $360 million surplus that was in that budget on July 6th is very shaky. It always has been pretty shaky because about $240 million of it depends on selling the Thompson Center in Chicago, which they hope to get, I think, $300 million for, and the state would get $240 after the costs of the sale. But that's pretty shaky, and that whole deal, that's one that Governor Rauner first introduced, I believe it was 2 years ago. He started on down the road to sell the thing. And it's been tied up ever since then there's huge fight between the governor and Mayor Emanuel, and that got all tied up with the school funding bill. There's no sign that the Thompson Center deal is going to go through even in fiscal year 2018 to bring any of this money. So there's a lot of, there's always a lot of moving parts in a state budget. Revenue fluctuates throughout the year and adjustments have to be made. But I think it is pretty clear that we're dealing with an imbalance. Now, the governor's Office of Management and Budget says it's $1.7 billion. That was their most recent estimate. There's debate about that. There's debate about how much exactly are we out of balance and how do we face this. I know the governor has some proposed cuts that he wants to make to make up the deficit. But again, this is kind of like deja vu for people who have covered the legislature, because 2.5 years ago in March 2015, that was Governor Rauner's, he was in office for a couple of months and he was facing a $1.6 billion deficit because of the budget that had been passed in May 2014, before he was even in office. And they came together and managed to balance that one out at the end of that fiscal year. You have to think that they're going to come together and do something like that again, because now we actually do have a budget in place to work with, whereas in the intervening couple of years, they had no budget whatsoever, and they were just locked, this lock horns, and not making any progress on anything. But that is where we stand, and there does have to be some adjustments here.
Well, problems that occurred, Matt, was that the legislature, as did Governor Rauner in his budget, anticipated a fairly significant chunk of savings in pension costs through this implementation of a new Tier 3, which was to allow, if I recall correctly, it was to allow new hires, if they wanted to get into a 401k program where the state would not have to set aside enough money for future benefits. It would basically wouldn't have to set aside anything. It would just pay every year to the employees a certain amount. And
right.
I don't remember all the details, but it was supposed to save a heck of a lot of money, and then it turns out that it can't be implemented as quickly as the governor and the legislature anticipated.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most interesting aspects of this, and in the back and forth between the two parties over this, and the governor and the legislature, is that the governor really, really pushed for Tier 3 for a long time. It was a pension reform that he really, really wanted, and he had it in the budget that he introduced in back in February. And, of course, that budget went nowhere, and that budget was relying on $4.6 billion from a grand bargain, which that whole line item was pretty widely ridiculed. But what when this budget was put together, the one that eventually was passed over the governor's veto, they included the same number. They included the same thing from his earlier budget, the $500 million savings. Rauner immediately had said that we're not going to get that kind of money out of it. Well, then this was a fact check that we did at PolitiFact where someone from the Better Government Association spoke to Dick Ingram, who is the head of the teachers retirement system. And he said, you know, we're not even going to start using that or putting that into place until July 2018, which is in fiscal year 2019. So there is nothing that's going to come from that. So that's an obvious one there. And that's one where the governor likes to blame the people who pass the budget over his veto about it, and then they like to turn the blame back on him and say, well, we only put that in because you wanted it in your budget.
Now, Brian, let me ask you, if you're a department or an agency out there and, you know, you've gotten money appropriated in this new budget and thinking, okay, things are going to be better than they have been the last few years, should you be nervous with that type of imbalance?
Well, I guess when you say you're a department, you don't mean like a State Department or you mean like a private
Social service
contract.
Agency
yeah,
or
social
somebody
service
like that,
agency,
possibly.
Right. Yeah, I would definitely be nervous. You're not only nervous because now there's uncertainty about the future money that you've lived with, but you probably still haven't gotten paid everything you've been owed for the last 2 years of service you've done to the state. I know with particularly the people who provide health services, dental services to state employees and, frankly, university workers, as you, Charlie, and I are through our radio station, some of them are waiting 2 years still. I think that last I heard it was late 2015 payments were going out, and they were going week by week to pay back some of these things that have been building up for 2 years. So, yeah, I would definitely be nervous. But, you know, these are things that the governor has targeted before, so I guess it's something that these agencies are used to, but probably should not be happy about.
And I did want to mention, Brian, you've reported on the fact that the state did issue some bonds to help try to pay down a backlog, though.
That's right. And so, but that money is not going to come in until for a few more weeks at least. The state is ultimately borrowing about $6 billion. It's going to the market, and we got an all-in, as they say, an all-in interest rate of about 3.5%. That includes costs and fees. And it's really complicated because there's different interest rates depending on the maturity dates of the bonds. But the point is, basically, the overall interest rate on our first set of these bonds we sold was 3.5%. And that is a heck of a lot better than the 9% to 12% interest rate we're paying on some of the backlog of bills. And so the idea is it's a good idea based on our present circumstances, but if you step back and think, oh my goodness, it's a bad idea to live off a credit card, which is what we've been doing stiffen the vendors for 2 years now, but now we're actually going to the market and we're still borrowing. We're borrowing off a different credit card to extend the metaphor to pay off things we should have paid for 2 years ago. So it's still kind of a crazy situation fiscally to be in. But, you know, if the legislature and the governor continue to try and align spending with tax revenue tax that comes in and they can be disciplined about that, well, then the projections are that eventually we will begin to get the backlog back to a more reasonable, manageable place.
As I mentioned at the start of the show, we're getting ready for the veto session to begin. It starts, the first week of it starts next week. And Brian or Matt, anything that we should be watching for, some more high-profile pieces of legislation out there?
Yeah, there was one that I'll start with has to do with how the government is going about procuring managed care services. This is for people on the Medicaid program, health insurance for the elderly, poor, and disabled in this state, a very wide-reaching program. The governor and his administration did not go through the normal procurement process to get these services. The legislature says, we think you should have done that. The governor vetoed the legislation, and that's something to watch. And I know, Matt, you had were looking at some other ones.
Right. There was a bill, House Bill 2462, which has to do with wage equity. And what it would do is it would prevent employers from asking job applicants about their past salary history during the application process. And the sponsors of the bill say that this is because that women, and particularly the minorities, their pay traditionally has been less than that of men. And when they're asked about their salary history, and they have to divulge what is essentially often a lower salary in their past jobs, that influences what they might get paid in their next job. That passed both the House and the Senate pretty overwhelmingly. In the House, it passed with a veto-proof majority, had 91 yes votes. In the Senate, it was one vote short of a veto-proof majority, but I believe that about maybe six senators were absent the day. It passed the Senate 35 to 18. You got to have 36 for an override. The governor vetoed that, and he said there were some technical grounds, and he wanted a law that's closer to one that Massachusetts has. But I am curious to see whether this gets overridden, given that it was just one vote shy in the Senate of being a veto-proof majority already.
It's time now for our notes from the field. Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, we've been talking about money and the latest reports for the campaign financing for the governor candidates came out earlier this week, and it showed that we're on the road to a record-setting spending spree to become governor of Illinois in the 2018 elections. Now, we know that Chicago Alderman Amaya Pawar dropped out, saying he couldn't raise money to compete with these people. And you look at, on the Democratic side, J.B. Pritzker gave his campaign $7 million during the last 3 months, not counting $7 million that he gave himself in October. So he's way up there. Bruce Rauner has something like $65 million in his war chest. Chris Kennedy is well below that. He took in about $1 million. And after that comes Senator Daniel Biss, who raised more than $800,000. But as it stands now, just the spending anticipated from Rauner and Pritzker will blow past all previous records.
And Brian, about 20 seconds.
Yeah, there's a case out of Chicago involving the police officer who is accused of homicide in the case of Laquan McDonald, the young man who was shot, young African-American man who was shot about 16 times by a Chicago police officer. The journalist who helped push that story into the mainstream and really propel the investigation forward has been called to testify. He says he will show up in court but will not reveal his sources. He kind of broke the story wide open with leaked autopsy reports and helped, like I said, helped push that story into national consciousness.
All right, we'll leave it there for this week. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Matt Dietrich, and you can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.